It's 9:15. You're listening to Cape Talk. Join the conversation 021-446-0567, WhatsApp 0725671567, tweet at Cape Talk and SMS 31567. Right now we have on the line Adam Whittington. He's in Stockholm and he is an international parental abduction specialist and he's also the founder of Project Rescue Children. Welcome back, Adam.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you for taking the time. We just, you know, we had so little time last night, and it's such an important topic, and we got people, you know, wanting more information and with questions, and then we couldn't really deal with it because we were out of time. So we've kind of tried to change that. So we've got about 15 minutes tonight, so we should be able to really get into it a little bit. So I want to just quickly start with the fact that you are an Australian.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And the reason I'm saying that is because when I was looking at some of the numbers, Australia has one of the lowest child abduction rates from what I could see. But, I mean, you're the expert, so correct me if I'm wrong there.
Mm. Well, listen, Australia has statistically, and this is the problem too, there's no government that holds correct statistics on actual amount of children being abducted. Between 300 to 500 children each year are abducted from Australia. Again, there's no correct figures, but between 300 to 500.
Mm-hmm. And this is abducted internationally, out of the country?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. So is there kind of classifications for abductions in the sense of if something happens inside a country and if something happens outside a country? Because one of the things that that I've discovered in my research is that when a child is taken out of a country, there's really nothing the parent can do inside the country that they reside in. They have to go to the legal bodies in the country that the child has been abducted to.
That's correct. Yes, that's exactly right.
And that's something that you guys work with, because you were talking a bit about the international law that kind of governs this kind of thing and how it's almost a bit toothless.
Well, it is, and this is where it becomes a legal minefield, and unfortunately why parents who are left behind, meaning the child has been taken from those parents, really do not know where to go. Obviously, their first point of contact is a family lawyer within their country, but to be honest, having a lawyer within your country is really useless, besides submitting Hague application if necessary. Otherwise, it's absolute paramount that they get a lawyer within the abducting country.
Yeah, that sounds right, because as I said, one of the websites that I found here said, you know, the rights of the parent or the caregiver from whom the child has been taken cannot be enforced in the country where they are residing. These rights must be pursued.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, in the country where the child is currently present. And then the other thing that I find a bit disturbing is this website went on to say, parental abduction is defined as the taking, retention, or concealment of a child or children by a parent, other family member, or the agent. So, you know, my mind was already blown by the fact that a parent can take a child so easily, you know, away from another parent,
yes,
and so far. And now to kind of find out, okay, wait a second, it could be another family member or an agent of the parent. So are parents hiring people to kidnap their children?
It's very, very uncommon. I mean, it's I have not heard of any situation where a parent or family hires somebody to originally kidnap the children. It's highly illegal for a start. Nearly every case, it's the parent. One or two cases I know of, it's been an uncle or auntie as well involved.
Assisting, so basically just aiding and abetting, as it were.
Exactly, yes.
So in your experience, what is the most common scenario? I mean, you've been doing this for 19 years.
Yeah. The most common scenario is exactly the situation we talked about the South African mother last night. Nearly 99% of cases, their children are abducted by being retained in the other country after a holiday or visiting a sick relative. And this is just a story that's created by the kidnapping parent and their family, because you can guarantee nearly 99% of the time the abducting parent has their family involved as well, meaning grandparents and uncles and aunties. So that is the number one way children are kidnapped these days. They are being retained in the other country after being given permission to leave their home country.
Mm-hmm. So you were also saying last night that when people try to get hold of you to help them, or people who do what you do, there is a process where you vet your clients.
Absolutely. And then we absolutely do this, and it's absolutely vital because, you know, in the time we've been doing this, we've knocked back about five parents who initially contact us for help through our vetting process. Or shortly after, we find evidence of domestic violence or child abuse. So there is no way in this world me or my team will assist anybody who's into domestic violence and or child abuse. So these are the jobs we refuse to do, and this is the jobs that this is why it's important for us to vet mm-hmm. our clients extremely well.
Mm-hmm. So you also said that you guys were seven, and I assume it's all guys, so please correct me if I'm wrong.
You were seven when you started. Female.
Okay.
One mm-hmm. female. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you started, and you're 13 now.
Correct.
Okay. So maybe a bit left off field, but how old are you guys?
We're all sort of similar age. I'm young. I'm 43. we're talking between 40, 45.
Okay. So you guys, and I'm asking because you said you all have a military, background. You all serve together. And then,
Yeah. And you, well, military or ex-police as well. I served in the Metropolitan Police in London for 9 years, after I finished the military. So we've all got military or police background.
And I assume that you have networks that you yeah. use to kind of assist you on the ground. Because what are the legalities? I mean, if you called in to help, you said the first time that you guys helped someone and then and then realized you could actually do this kind of, you know, all the time,
yeah.
not just as a once-off.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, the child was in Malaysia. Is that right?
Indonesia.
Sorry, yeah. So,
One of the main things that we do when we take on a case is we actually look at the legalities of the case, and if the left behind parent has custody, do they have custody in the other country? Is that parent taking the child back? Is it a crime in that country? As an example, Indonesia, it is not a crime for a parent to take their children. So we look at so many different things. You know, we spend a good 80% planning, researching and planning before we even get to touch the ground in the other country. And then we use, depending on the situation and the legalities, what legal papers our client has. It's a matter of finding the children. If they have custody, we approach the authorities and say, listen, this child's been kidnapped. We've found where they are. These are the court papers we have with our client. You need to assist us. So it's all different scenarios.
So in this 19 years, what's been the trickiest case and what's been kind of maybe the worst case, if you can talk about it, and you can talk about it very broadly?
Yeah.
Or not?
We're pretty honest with our clients as well, and that's why many people come back to us. Listen, the first thing people who are listening need to understand is there's a myth that if a child is taken by a parent, that child is safe and well. That is so wrong. A child that is taken does not mean by a parent does not mean that they're safe and well, because in many of our cases, the children are neglected. They do not go to school. Medical is an issue because they know if they go to school or hospitals or doctors, they can be traced. So usually a lot of these kidnappers know they've done wrong.
So they have to keep them out of the system.
They have Interpol warrants, arrest warrants. So they're scared to even leave the country. So they go underground. You know, they lose their phone, the emails stop, it's like trying to find a needle in a haystack, so to speak, if the kidnapper and their family and friends help them. Probably the worst case I've ever done was the little UK boy from Laos. He was kidnapped to Laos. It was a horrible story, and he was only very young, and the mother took the child to meet the grandparents. 3 days after she arrived in Laos, she took off to the US, America, with her new boyfriend. She left the baby there with the 70-year-old grandparents who can't look after themselves.
Wow.
So the father tried everything he could. He had UK return orders from the London High Court. The child must be returned. It means absolutely nothing in a foreign country. And then the father tried for 2 to 3 years to go through the Laos courts, and it's corrupt as corrupt you can find. And he had no option. He hadn't seen or heard from his child in 2 to 3 years. So he looked at us. He contacted us after he got scammed by somebody else who took his money and didn't help him. So we got involved, and basically we had to find the child first. So you've got to be careful where you go in some of these countries. You can't just walk into a local village in the middle of nowhere pretending you're a tourist. So we created a story and set up that we were a documentary company from Australia filming how Laos people live in the villages. So we made business cards and had all the tech stuff. And we actually went in there and we got permission from the village chief to allow us to film. And we found the child. And he was in horrendous condition. He was 5 years at the time, and he had no teeth. He was just, you know, so malnourished. It was horrible. It was just horrible. So we started talking to a couple of local people there, and one of the neighbors told us that this, he told us the whole story about this because he was white. His father's from England, Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked out of place anyway.
Right, right.
And the neighbor basically told us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the neighbor basically told us that this child was taken and the mother's gone and the grandparents are not looking after him. So there was stories about the child being sold on the black market, which happens so much in that area through Thailand, Laos, Cambodia. Children are going all the time. So we didn't tell the father this. Now, we made a decision not to because he would have just freaked, got completely worried.
Yeah.
So my team made a quick decision that we had to get this child out.
Mm-hmm.
So we called the father in UK. We said, we need you to come to Thailand and wait. To make a long story short, we made him wait on the Thailand border where the Mekong River is between Laos and Thailand. And we'd done an operation. It was extremely highly risky, completely illegal. And but we made a decision that if we didn't help this child,
right,
and this child had been sold, we wouldn't be able to live with ourselves.
So you basically so weighed you weighed up, you know, the situation the child was in, and the fact that what you needed to do to say the child was illegal, and you came out on the side of the child. So we're going to do this illegal thing because
down to morality. We knew we had the skills to get this child out, and if we didn't, and we heard that the child had been sold and disappeared, how could we live? We all have children ourselves.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't be able to live with ourselves knowing the fact that we didn't help. To make a long story short, we set up an operation, fairly military type, but without weapons. We got across the Mekong River illegally, so we entered Laos without passports and everything, and we basically waited for the child to come out of the place he was living, and we took him with local people as well who communicated with the child to let him know, and we got him straight across the Mekong River. There is some footage, I think, on YouTube with that, and we met the father directly on the other side. And we went to the British Embassy in Thailand, who assisted with the passport. And we flew from Bangkok straight to Manchester. The family in Laos didn't really care. And that's the story. Now the child is living a great life, you know, back in Manchester. He's excelling now at school. So it's really good. It's a good story.
So, and I have to ask, because you said you guys went in there and pretended to be documentary filmmakers, and as a documentary filmmaker, I think that was very clever of you, and I'm very kind of amused by the fact that you guys did the business cards and everything. Did you actually use some of that footage?
Well, we film everything. Every recovery we've done, and we've rescued just over 200 children now in our time. Every single one is filmed, but we do not release it to the media. Some shots we release, and there is film that we released when we were crossing the Mekong River in the boat with this child that you can see, and you actually see the footage of the first time the father meets him in 2 to 3 years where they actually meet. So we release that.
And
that's on YouTube as well. And, you know, it's a great story. And we're very proud of that.
And did you guys go back and kind of check on him a little while later, to see what he looked like?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I was there. I was actually there last year. I took them out for lunch, and we gave the boy an Xbox gift game that he's into. We have a very close relationship with all our past clients and their children. And there's not one of those children who have been psychologically damaged or from our actions. Now, what we did there was completely not our normal situation, but it had to be done. Mm-hmm. And if anybody had seen the child's condition, they would understand why. And a matter of fact, the British Embassy Deputy Commissioner in Laos, he actually told the father, with me in the back of the ambassador's car, he said to his father, "Father, the only way you're going to get them out is basically looking at me." Mm-hmm. So although governments will not step forward and approve some of the work we do, I can tell you 100% behind the scenes, they encourage it.
Okay. So I have one of our listeners is asking for some advice.
Sure.
I mean, if you can give it, great. And if you can't, then we'll just move on and see what we can do for her. So she says, "Hi, my ex-partner is British." So I'm assuming she's South African. "And he's asked if he can take our girls to the UK for 4 weeks over Christmas. We have dual custody, but the girls are 80% with me. I've not worried about it. But although I have to give written consent for him to take them, is there anything I can do to ensure he brings them back after the 4 weeks?" So basically, is there anything she can do once she gives him the consent to take them for 4 weeks? What can she do?
Well, I can confidently say, it being the UK, there are numerous ways that she can get the child back. Now, I know the UK authorities return children very often, not necessarily always through the Hague Convention, but listen, there's no guarantee on anything in this line of work. But the UK is a very good country to give permission for a child to go to.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So we can say to her that it's fairly safe.
It is. There's no guarantee, but the UK has numerous methods and legalities of returning the child back to South Africa. Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. So she mustn't worry about it. If he does decide he wants to keep them, she can have a much better recourse, and her chances are much better dealing with the UK government than with some other government like Indonesia, for example.
Absolutely. Well, I can pretty much give you 90% sure the courts in the UK will say to the father, "You need to return this child." And the UK has a fairly okay enforcement. Mm-hmm. There actually is a government body that will try and enforce the order. So I would be fairly confident. But it was another country, I would be very wary. But she still has to be wary, but it's not as high risk.
Okay, so I want to just quickly ask you before we wrap up, how much requests have you gotten from South Africa or Africa for your assistance?
Yeah, quite a lot. South Africa is quite a lot, actually. There's quite a lot of, actually, we're doing two cases right now, South Africa to European countries.
Sorry, just a little bit of shock there on my part. Okay, so South Africa is keeping you quite busy.
Yeah. Listen, there's so many. Mm-hmm. It's really good what the South Africans have done, where you need consent forms, and I think every country should follow South Africa's lead, because you guys were the first country to implement that.
Yeah, and I remember.
And that's great, but it's not a bulletproof.
But I'm sure it's a deterrent. You know, it's like a
absolutely. A it's a great thing.
Yeah,
because I think when it first broke, we posted everything about it on our social media sites. You know, congratulating South Africa for being a government that actually has tried to do something.
Yeah, no, because I remember a couple of my friends and people that I know who travel a lot with kids, and some of them were divorced, were complaining about what a pain in the bum it was. And I was saying, you know what, it is a pain in the bum, but as someone who works in journalism and sees the stories firsthand, human trafficking, child trafficking, just from that perspective, and then also these abductions, which I didn't know how widespread it was. You know, I just had some awareness of it. For me, it was always.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
You know, if they have to wait at passport control for an extra 5-10 minutes getting questioned, so be it. But human trafficking, which we deal with as well with my charity, is a major, major worldwide problem. So if these parents complain for 5 minutes, well, let them come and speak to me, and I can tell them a few stories, and I'm sure I'll change their mind.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. We've got another message, WhatsApp, saying, if you doubt that the father may keep the children in the foreign country, then rather go with them, because it's too much of a risk if you're not sure. And I suppose that is one way, to go about it.
It is. But then again, depending on what country, because I know at least half a dozen cases where it's usually UK women who have gone with the partners to, say, Tunisia, Algeria,
right?
And the mothers are stuck. Their passports are taken off them. Bad things happen to them, and they're forced to leave the country. So, yes, it might be okay depending on what country you go to, but I know it does not work in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to understand some countries are really lawless, and a lot of them are, especially Middle Eastern countries, are predominantly male-dominated countries. The foreign mother coming in as a tourist has absolutely no legalities in that country.
Mm, no, that is true. I can understand some of that. I mean, I've done some work in countries where it's heavily patriarchal, and you know, the guys,
they have
all the rights and all the power, and it's terrifying, actually.
As a foreign mother coming into on a holiday with your child, just to make sure that. She would have no legal rights whatsoever in that country, if it's a Middle Eastern country.
So, that is one of the sad realities. So better safe than sorry. If in doubt, just
absolutely
say no.
Yeah.
I think that's
going to be good. Well, I get emails all the time from asking these questions, and my advice is always, if you have doubts, if there's a doubt in your mind, about this possibility, don't let them go.
Mm-hmm. Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show. I think we've given it a good, we've pummeled the topic, and we've gotten all the information out of it. And keep up the good work. I mean,
thank you for having me on.
You know, thank you. You make me feel like, what can I do? You know, how do I spread awareness? What, you know, how do I get involved?
Well, this is what you're doing, and this is what we've posted on our social media. Thank you, you guys. Cape Talk, for actually bringing awareness. And that's what this whole subject needs. There is no awareness. And by you guys doing this talk show, it brings awareness to at least a few of your listeners. So that's
true.
A good thing. So well done.
Thank you. And Adam, thank you very much. And we hope to catch up with you another time to talk about some of the methods and some of the training that you guys do. But thank you so much for being available and
You're welcome.
For doing what you do and spreading the awareness. Have a good evening further.